And it still wasn't a case where we were isolated from the people of Liverpool. For example, just prior to us being expelled in June, I was one of the people expelled in June itself, we organised a militant, openly militant, not a Labour Party, but a militant public rally in Liverpool. Now, I made the mistake when booking the time. I forgot it was a bank holiday weekend. I can't remember what night it was, but it was during the bank holiday. But despite that, 1,200 people came into the Philharmonic Hall in Liverpool to a militant rally where those of us up for expulsion, as well as others, including Addenbrooke health service workers that were on strike from further down south, were on the platform. And we had a fantastic event during which Ricky Tomlinson, the actor that played Bobby Grant at that time on Brookside, came forward to us before the rally and met those of us on the platform, and then donated £100 to the collection during the rally, and made his famous speech on Brookside a few months later, probably based in part on that experience of the "Call Me a Militant." If a militant is somebody that creates jobs and stands up for people, call me a militant, that sort of approach. So it wasn't that we were driven out of the working class, it wasn't that we were isolated and voted out of office. In fact, it was the courts that removed the councillors. It was the courts, under the egg and on of the Tory government and of the Labour right-wing leadership, that removed people, surcharged the 49 or 47 of them due to deaths, 47 socialist councillors, removed them from office, banned them for 5 years, and issued £106,000 of a surcharge and over £240,000 of additional costs. But the fact that all that money was collected, including from levies amongst the likes of council workers in Glasgow, is an indication that the socialists were still popular and not isolated. In fact, in the 1997 elections, the 1987 elections in Liverpool, it was the biggest ever vote for the Labour Party, bigger even than the landslide of 1945. 155,000 votes, 56% of the total. And it was such a landslide that if the equivalent had taken place in the rest of the country, there would have been a landslide Labour victory instead of the Tories getting back in. So that was a measure as well, that socialist policies in action, not just in words, based on a mobilisation of ordinary people to fight for them, found a ready response amongst the working people. And it also shows that even though we suffered setbacks in 1985, after the clear-cut victory of 84, nevertheless, the growth of socialism continued. In fact, membership of Millicent, for example, in Merseyside, peaked during the period of retreat in 1986. That was the biggest single membership we had, showing that sometimes, as well as those that joined during the crest of the wave, there was others that joined because they saw what we were made of and prepared to stand up for principles and beliefs. And I think the biggest gain of all, to conclude, was the way in which the consciousness of ordinary people, their sense of their own power, of their own ability to combine and defeat even the most hard-nosed, the government and all the other forces in society, that was perhaps the biggest gain of all of that period, the political enlightenment through struggle that took place, but struggle with leadership as well, a conscious leadership that spelt out what was required and spelt out what had been learnt in the process and what we learned from everybody else in the process. That's why there was such a conscious strategy of revenge towards not just those of us that were the socialist leadership in Liverpool, but also the Liverpool people themselves, where private companies withdrew in subsequent years. The government consciously denuded the place of industry and services, deliberately went in to crush the spirit of the Liverpool working class who had dared to fight and beat the Thatcher government in the mid-80s. And that series of events also put socialism and our ideas on the map on a world scale. We were covered in the world's media. We were interviewed on the world BBC World Service. We got feedback of the likes of Russian sailors discussing what the Marxist Council in Liverpool were doing. There was a boat from Ghana, or it was owned by a Dutch company actually, but with Ghanaian sailors on it, and they docked in Birkenhead Docks. And when we discovered that it had happened, we went down, and we discovered they'd consciously gone there because they'd been deprived of their wages for either 6 or 12 months by the owner, and decided after every other port of call literally and metaphorically had failed, that they would come to Liverpool because they'd heard of the Socialist Council fighting back, and they docked in order to make contact with us. And we had meetings with them where they evicted the captain of the boat from his cabin and got me and others in to speak in meetings with them, including on things like, what's your world policy? You know, didn't ask much, but that was the thing they wanted to know. What's your world policy? And we recruited a whole gang of Ghanaian sailors into our international organisation as a result of that experience. Maggie Thatcher, when she went to Thailand, faced youth chanting Liverpool. I'd like to think it was about football, but actually it was about the city council battle that they were taunting her. The ruling class bared their teeth in rage and have sought revenge since, as I've said. And for example, and I'll conclude on this, for example, in 1985, they were actually trying to create the conditions for almost a military takeover in the city of Liverpool. I remember waking up one night and all these lights from the sky were flashing down. Now, I'm not a drug taker, so it wasn't that had induced it. But these floodlights, as it turned out, were army reconnaissance for an operation that was broadcast then through the likes of the Daily Mail, where they were saying, partly for a propaganda effect to terrify the population, scare the living daylights out of the elderly especially, that they were going to establish commissioners to run the city, dictators in other words, remove the council, have a government dictatorship in the city, and remove the elderly and the infirm and the children to places like the Isle of Man, which, especially given the Bee Gees came from there, probably is a fate worse than death. But the thing is that they were carrying that threat around in the media, sections of the media, partly to terrify people, but also because they were terrified of the upheaval of a major city going into potential bankruptcy and the civil strife of an indefinite strike potentially taking place by its council workforce. So that's the kind of preparations they got up to. We had it confirmed later on that MI5 hired a private bugger, so to speak, in order to put a spike mic in the gable walls, the plaster work outside the militants' headquarters in Liverpool, to listen in to meetings we were having. Now, as it happens, we had the more sensitive discussions in a nearby park, precisely because they thought the phones would be bugged, and we weren't being paranoid, and that was proven by the facts, except that what we didn't realise is that in that same park, a van was sitting, listening to our office through this spike mic. So the methods they stooped to, the attacks from the church, the attacks from the Liverpool Echo I mentioned, and Paul McCartney.
What did he do?
Paul McCartney hasn't lived in Liverpool for most of his life. Paul McCartney lived in a place on the Wirral, had a house there rather. He lived in several places, America, probably in various other parts of England and so on. But one of the places that he had was a kind of a castle or mansion on the richest side of the Wirral Peninsula, facing down towards North Wales. I think it was in Park Gate, if I remember. But I can't remember that for certain. But he hadn't lived in Liverpool for a long, long time. But he then came onto the media and started whimpering about how the Socialist Council had destroyed his city. He was mobilised by the reactionary forces in order to try and isolate us so further. He didn't do that, by the way, in 1984. It was when there was a greater sense of isolation that all these creatures piled in to try and put the boot in further to ensure a defeat of the council. But what should be an encouragement to you is the fact that despite all of those things, we achieved all those reforms, we mobilised such a mass movement, we defeated Thatcher's government, and we carried out socialism in action, which gives you a glimpse of the fact that you can win.
And
now,
well,
25 years is a long time in my life. 25 years in history, obviously, is an eye blink. And we have had ebbs and flows. Not everything is for the better now compared to then. But nevertheless, we should be encouraged by the fact that such a monumental movement did take place in one city, which inspired people nationally and internationally with its tenacity, its unity of purpose, and the fact it was under socialist leadership. And I'll finish on this point. I've said a lot about Millicent. That's not to say everything we did was right, but in fundamentals, we were proven right. And also, I think we're justified in organising ourselves inside the Labour Party at that stage. That would be an utter nonsense now, to try and organise socialists inside the Labour Party. And it's not a case that people should organise in the same way we did inside the Labour Party, inside the Scottish Socialist Party. There's actually more similarity between Liverpool Labour Party at that time and the SSP than there is, you know, differences. But the big difference is that, unfortunately, Liverpool District Labour Party was only one city branch of a national party that always had a pro-capitalist leadership. That's the difference compared to the SSP, because the SSP in one city or town or village is in fundamentals the same as in the rest of the country, and there's not a pro-capitalist wing, there's not a leadership that is completely opposed to socialist change like the Labour leadership. So it would be totally wrong for anybody to try and practice, if you like, enterism inside the SSP, because it's politically totally unjustified. Whereas in the Labour Party, I think it was entirely justified for Marxists to organise, for socialists to organise, because the right wing were, and it was necessary to do that to counter them. And the leadership example of Liverpool showed that if working class people are given a worthwhile socialist lead and it's turned into concrete, real, living ideas and practice, they'll respond, and that therefore the future bodes well that way whenever those events repeat themselves in whatever form. So I think it should be an encouragement to us all.